Hello and welcome to OMFIF's Fed Talk podcast. My name is Danai Kirkapulu. I'm Chief Economist and Head of Research at OMFIF, and I'm joined by Seema Shah, Global Investment Strategist at Principal Global Investors. Welcome, Seema, to the podcast. So
Thank
we're
you.
Going to be talking today about the latest Fed decision, a decision that was widely anticipated to keep rates on hold. There was a rate hike in the previous meeting, so it was largely anticipated also partly because of the format. There was no press conference scheduled for this month's decision, but still there was some movement in the market. There was a more dovish statement, perhaps. But how did you see the decision? Was that something that you anticipated? And does it impact your outlook for future rate rises in the rest of this year?
Thank you. Well, I think this statement was actually to be expected. There were some tweaks to the language, but generally they were very much close to expectations, and they haven't really changed my outlook for the Fed hikes at the next meeting in June and further one or two times later in the year. Now, there were some areas which I think the market did react to, specifically changes in the description of growth being modest. They noted the slowdown in Q1. They dropped the reference to the economic outlook having strengthened in recent months. But these were all exactly to be expected, and we would still continue to expect the Fed to hike as before.
And how about the insertion to the symmetric approach to tolerating inflation being above target? How do you read that? Because there is also a trade-off between tolerating inflation above target depends on whether this is a persistent phenomenon or having a shift in policy that may come as a surprise to the markets, because the guidance that the Fed has given so far has been one of very gradual tightening. So if inflation does stay above target, the Fed may want to shift its policy, but on the other hand, it may not want to surprise the market in that way. How do you see that symmetric approach?
Well, I think the insertion of that word probably is one of the reasons why the market did react the way it did. But actually, that language is already quite familiar from various speeches by Fed officials in the past. And it's also in the FOMC's statement on longer run goals and monetary policy strategy. So I actually don't think that its addition adds very much new information, especially, you know, the word symmetric already appeared in the fourth paragraph of the statement, as always. So to me, that doesn't change much. We would expect guidance to adjust, you know, gradually as we get inflation closer to target and as the hiking cycle goes. So these kind of changes to the statement, we should continue to expect it. And I think the market's reaction was probably a slight knee-jerk reaction, but it doesn't change the overall view for the market expectations.
And how do you see the latest decision in the context of the broader macroeconomic policy mix that we're seeing in the US? So there's expansionary fiscal plans. There is also trade policy that is considered quite a risk in the markets and plans to increase tariffs. So it's quite an uncertain macroeconomic environment for the Fed, and also fiscal stimulus, inflation near target, wage growth is quite fast. So we are near full employment. And how does that fit with the rate decisions that we may see later in the year? Will it be enough, you said, 2 to 3 rate hikes in the broader context of the policy mix and fiscal policy in particular?
Well, I don't think anyone would disagree that it is somewhat of an uncertain time for the US, not just because of the various government policies that are in place, but when you get to end cycle and after a long period of very unconventional monetary measures, it is to be expected that the environment becomes more difficult to judge. Now, with regards to the fiscal stimulus, it does come at a time when the economy is already end cycle. It's very unusual. And the way that I would come to think about it is that whatever the government gives in terms of fiscal policy, the Fed will need to remove at a later date. But, you know, overall speaking, I think the fiscal stimulus has most likely extended the cycle. It's allowed growth to perhaps avoid a more significant slowdown that you've seen in other parts of the world in the first quarter of the year. And certainly it's enabled the equity market gains to stretch through to the end of 2018. I think that with the environment there, with the trade risks and the fiscal risks, the Fed just simply need to be more careful. But of course, at this point, you would expect them to have to act in that way anyway.
Certainly has helped avoid a slowdown. But having said that, we're also very late in the cycle, some commentators may say, in terms of where we are near full employment. There hasn't been a slowdown in a while. How do you see that broader macroeconomic outlook developing in the coming months? And is the Fed going to be behind the curve when that happens in terms of the ammunition tools that it has at its disposal if we do see the cycle suddenly turning?
Well, the labour market is tightening. They still need to see wage growth picking up in a sustainable way that they believe it can be continued. Now, there are signs of that, but they still need to be somewhat cautious with regards to their tightening cycle. And after spending the last 8 or 9 years wishing for inflation at 2%, they are unlikely to get ahead of the curve and try and beat inflation away before it has a chance to take hold. even within those realms, when you are end cycle, and of course, as you said, we have had fiscal stimulus as well, the Fed will need to maintain hiking, but be very, very cautious. So one of the more important things for the Fed over the next few months, and certainly even the next year, will be to be very transparent, very clear, and give very good communication so that the market knows exactly where the Fed is going.
Yes, there certainly may be trade-offs between maintaining that credibility and data dependence, especially if the economic environment develops in an uncertain way, as there is risk for that given the uncertainties in the policy of the White House. But let's talk a little bit about the dollar as well, because we have fiscal stimulus at a time of full employment. Maybe this will filter through to more imports, leading to a twin deficit. Does that imply a weaker dollar necessarily? In the past, we've seen twin deficits coinciding with a strengthening dollar. We've seen that the Reagan Volcker combo in the past of easy fiscal policy, tight monetary policy. Is the Trump-Powell combination going to have similar economic effects? How will it impact the dollar, this combination of perhaps loose fiscal policy while monetary policy, while continuing to remain accommodating, is on a tightening course?
Well, I think there's two ways to think about it. One is what's happening in the very short term, and that's quite different to what will probably happen if you look more medium term. Given where the dollar has fallen to and the kind of positioning that you tend to see on the FX markets at the moment, it seems more likely that the Fed will be strengthening over the next month or so, or even maybe longer than that. The reason for that is that the level of short positions have moved to a point where they cannot really push the dollar further down. When you've had fiscal stimulus as well, and the economy is looking relatively strong compared to many regions of the world, that's probably the overriding factor for the time being. And as well, of course, we have the Fed having tighter monetary policy than many other central banks. But if we look further out, there's two things that come into play. One is the relative growth performance of the US to other countries. And with regards to that, I think that the US is likely to underperform. So once you move past the end of the year where the tax stimulus has given that US economy a second life, then coming into next year, it's more likely that the US is going to underperform in many areas of the world, including and more specifically emerging markets. So that's really a downward impact on the dollar. And then the other part is what you mentioned, which is a twin deficit. You have a major imbalance building up in the US economy. It was already there and it's getting even larger than maybe people have predicted. And in that kind of environment, we would actually expect the dollar to be on a slight downward path over the next few years.
And when you say that the US economy may underperform, are you referring specifically to emerging markets that you mentioned, or how about against other advanced economies? Because as you said, the Fed is ahead of the curve relative to the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and other central banks that are still much more behind in terms of their normalization of monetary policy. So how do you expect the US to fare against those markets?
I'd expect the US to underperform both the emerging markets and several advanced economies. One of the reasons is that the US is far more advanced in terms of its overall economic cycle. So we already know that the emerging markets are slightly behind, but that's also the case for, I think, for Europe and for Japan too. So with regards to that as well, we've seen the relative performance from the central banks moving along that line where the US is moving first, we'll have the ECB probably moving next, and the Bank of Japan moving last. And we would expect the currencies to move in line with that, reflecting that difference in the place where they are in the cycle.
And in terms of the financial stability issues that the Fed's long time of accommodative monetary policy, extraordinarily loose monetary policy, may have impacted the asset prices, financial stability risks that may have built up. This is something that certainly lots of central banks around the world are worried about, and people have been pointing the finger to central banks, and maybe when these asset price cycles reverse is something that central banks will be blamed for. So how do you see the financial stability risk, the inflation of asset prices, and the Fed's role in that, and how does it fit with the tightening of monetary policy? Can this be gradually deflated? Can this be managed, do you think?
Well, I mean, you've hit a very important point here, because the Fed has come under major criticism, as did the ECB as well, with regards to quantitative easing. And that criticism is one of the reasons why they've looked to shrink their balance sheet, despite many economists around the world believing that the balance sheet did not need to shrink. It just needed to stay stable. So that criticism is the reason why the Fed is trying to unwind a lot of those crisis measures, and it's led to that balance sheet shrinkage. And the other side of that is, of course, interest rate rises, so normalizing those policy rates. Now, as I said before, the fact that inflation has been so low over the last 10 years, and it's really what the central banks have wanted, they are more likely to be behind the curve in the first part of this monetary policy tightening cycle because they need inflation to really take hold. But then once it's got to the point where the inflation level has reached 2% and it's hovering around there, and there is genuine belief and confidence that it can remain there, we'd expect the Fed to step up again. And one of the reasons is that they would be worried about the financial imbalances that could have been built in the system. So they're trying to fight two fires. One is inflation, but the other is financial stability. They want to create inflation, but they don't want to let financial instability to take over. So we would expect that even next year, we have more Fed hikes. So another 2 to 3 hikes in 2019, and then maybe some more in 2020, which is quite in line with what we've seen from the FOMC's own projections. And the other thing that's on their mind is, when it comes to another recession, what will they do? Do they have enough ammunition? Do they have a sufficient cushion in place for providing some kind of stimulus to the economy when it needs it? It's unlikely, given the amount of criticism over the last few years, that they would try to go down the quantitative easing route again. There are other policies in place that they could try, such as price level targeting, changing the overall inflation target to a higher level. All of these things are not ideal. And what they would prefer to have is a situation where they can just cut rates as they have in previous slowdowns, instead of having to resort to those exceptional measures that we saw over the last 10 years.
You made a very interesting point about the balance sheet, and I'd like to come back to that. But before, firstly, what you mentioned now about the quantitative easing, and it may not be a route that they want to go down again. Why do you think that is? Is that because of the public criticism for QE? Because in Europe, there's also legal issues associated with that. There is the outstanding case of the German Constitutional Court in terms of quantitative easing, and there are fears that if quantitative easing is actually stopped, then it won't be possible legally to restart it. But in the US, is it, you think, the public opinion, or is it that they won't have the room to do that, that it will be the Fed's choice not to go down that route again because of the consequences that it may have caused in terms of asset prices?
I think it's really down to a lot of public and political pressure. There's many, many very loud voices who have believed that quantitative easing stopped the economy from really working through a number of its problems, and industries have been propped up artificially by the Fed, and that this will create bubbles in future. They also believe that in moving away from the general rules-based system of previous years, what has led to is that the economy is somewhat imbalanced. You're more likely to have more excessive cycles where you have a larger upswing and a larger downswing as well. And their belief is that we need to return to a more rules-based system where you are simply dealing with monetary policy via interest rates rather than through the balance sheet. And those loud voices have the greater handle here when it comes to monetary policy. So it is a very different situation to Europe, although I would say there are similar beliefs about the balance sheet, not just political pressure in terms of it was illegal, but the same kind of criticism about the potential imbalances that will have built up in the system.
It certainly feeds into the broader issue of central bank independence. What are the criticisms on central banks as they have taken on more powers and as their remits have expanded through this period of reaction to the financial crisis and trying to support the recovery through extraordinarily loose monetary policy and unconventional measures? But what you mentioned earlier about the balance sheet, so is there a reason to think that the balance sheet should return to the level it was before? There is a pressure to start shrinking the balance sheet, but in the light of the new normal, long-term rates being perhaps lower than what they were before and not returning to exactly the previous levels, the balance sheet, where does it have to return to?
So I would say firstly that it's not just political pressure for this. There's actually been pressure from leading economists around the world for QE. So it's not just a question of independence, but it's genuine academics sitting there and believing that there was no need to increase the size of the balance sheet as it was. Now, when it comes to reducing it, the key concern for economists about reducing it and why there was many voices out there, including Ben Bernanke, against reducing the balance sheet was really to do with the fact that reducing it could create a lot of financial problems in itself. So it could unravel markets, it could destabilize them as well. Now, what we've seen so far over the last 6 months of it has been very, very little impact. The market has taken it extremely smoothly. And it may certainly be that having a larger balance sheet in the future one day would help for another crisis, because the kind of lending schemes that have been in place via the balance sheet will then be easier to do. But certainly once we started this road to go down, shrinking the balance sheet, we may as well continue on it. But I don't think there is any consensus on exactly what level the Fed is going to be striving for to end the balance sheet. We don't know that. And I think that as we get closer in the next year or so to whatever the endpoint is, the Fed will need to provide some kind of communication to give the market that idea about when do they stop reducing the balance sheet. Without that kind of communication, it will also lead to market instability itself. So it will be a project for the Fed to really start thinking about, and something that they'll have to introduce in a very, very transparent and clear way. And for the ECB as well, for the time being, I mean, once they finish their tapering, most likely at the end of this year, we would expect them to have somewhat of a period where the balance sheet stays unchanged in a similar way to the Fed. And then in a year or two, maybe even longer, depends on who's setting up the ECB. But at some point, they will look to reduce the balance sheet. Now, when that happens, that's when I have the most concerns about financial conditions. Because until now, if you look at the Bank of Japan, the ECB, the Bank of England, and the Fed together, their balance sheets altogether have still been increasing because the ECB and BOJ have offset the Fed. At some point, when that turns so that the ECB is shrinking, the Fed is shrinking, the BOJ may still be expanding at that point, and the Bank of England may be perhaps stable, there will be a significant tightening in financial conditions. And we would hope that that comes at a time when the economy is strong enough to deal with those consequences. But if the economy is already slowing down, and it's already losing momentum, and there are already concerns growing about recession, that will be a significant concern for us and certainly for markets.
Timing will certainly be very important, but as you said, it's also an issue about communication and transparency, and the Fed has proven itself to have been successful in this space in the past, so it should only continue doing so with the case of the balance sheet as well. Seema Shah, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Fed Talks. It's been a fascinating discussion talking about the latest Fed decision, rates on hold, your outlook for further rate rises this year, the outlook for inflation, the broader macroeconomic environment, Trump's fiscal stimulus plan, trade policy, how does this interplay with the Fed, and also about the broader issues about central bank policy, unwinding of balance sheets, what's happening more broadly in the world, and will the economy be ready to withstand this tightening that may be happening simultaneously by the world's major central banks further down the line. Thank you very much for joining us. And to all our listeners, if you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.